Nothing like starting a Sunday morning with House Rules. Episode number 29 of the Sunday Morning Grind podcast. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley. Greg, we have come up with a name for this one pretty quickly. I thought it was easy. It's about as easy as Easy Lover coming up with the name for this one. Chidi Iwoma.
And you knew this one last week when I said that we were on episode 29. You're like, is that the Chidi Iwoma episode?
Chidi Iwoma episode.
How am I supposed to argue a name like that to name an episode?
Chidi Iwoma was a first of all, he played in the NFL for seven seasons. Five of them, five and a half, if you will, were five seasons and a couple of games. Actually, I take that back. It was four full seasons and then a couple of games in that fifth season with the Steelers. Then he played three games in that same season with New England in 2006. And then an additional season with Tennessee. But he played the majority of his career with the Steelers as a defensive back and a special teamer for all intents and purposes. But the Chidi Iwoma episode.
I honestly and truly don't remember him, but that was because 2001, I was 7 years old.
Sounds about right.
So
that explains a lot. Yeah. Chidi Iwoma was playing for the Steelers when I was in college. So thank you for making me old today, Greg. I appreciate you.
To our listeners out there, can you spell Chidi Iwoma without cheating?
Ah, that's a good question. Because I couldn't. I had to look down and make sure I knew how to spell it. So there's that. Special prize for the first person who can tweet the show, Sunday MORN Grind, with the correct spelling of Chidi Iwoma. And we will know if you cheated. Actually, we won't know if you cheated. So I'm lying. But still.
Don't cheat. Somebody will know.
True. But yeah.
I can't even look him up because I spelled it so poorly.
First person to spell Chidi Iwoma correctly and tweet the show, Sunday MRN Grind, we'll get a prize.
You might actually not be able to cheat because I'm trying to like sound it out, and even Google's like, are you sure you didn't mean this? Like, they can't even figure him out.
Actually, you know what? I do have a prize. I'll pay for it myself. You will get a free copy of Pittsburgh's Civic Arena, the newest publication by the Association of Gentlemen Pittsburgh Journalists, of which I'm one. It's a new book that just came out last week about the Civic Arena, the history of the Civic Arena, some of the great things that happened there, Penguins games, college basketball, even wrestling and boxing, concerts, all kinds of stuff. Pretty much all the years of history of Pittsburgh Civic Arena. So the first person who tweets us at Sunday MORN Grind with the correct spelling of Chidi Iwoma, Steelers special teamer, four-year Steelers special teamer, will get a copy of Pittsburgh Civic Arena on me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're doing giveaways spontaneously.
And I have notifications on my phone, so I will know who the first person is.
Yes. And we'll get your information, and we will send you a free copy of the book.
I like it.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I got to read that book, too.
I'll get people's attention.
Yeah.
All right, so now that we've done that, we've started the show on a generous note, let's start doing the important stuff. Let's start doing the fun stuff.
All right, what do you want to talk about today, Josh? Tell our listeners what we're talking about.
We have a lot to get into, actually. We're going to recap last week's Steelers win against the Broncos. We'll preview this upcoming game, Steelers and Seahawks, going down tonight, Sunday Night Football. That's going to be a big deal. We'll also review the week that was in the NFL. We'll talk about the division series reactions outside the Dodgers and Giants, because at the time of this recording, that series will not be over yet. But we got hot cheat picks as well. Since we're already talking about the Chidi Iwoma episode of this podcast, we might as well start with the Steelers, right? So we'll start Steelers-Broncos.
So I got to start by just saying, the Steelers continue to make me look terrible. It's like 1 week you think you know who they are, and then they go, we are who you thought they were. Because every time I think I know who they are, I'm wrong. Ben can't throw for a lick against Green Bay. What's he do against the Broncos? He throws all over them. And that's against a good defense.
Well, throwing all over them is maybe a slight little bit of an overshare, because he only threw the ball 25 times.
Okay.
He had 25 passing attempts. But he also averaged 10 yards of completion.
Right.
Or it's just a 10 yards an attempt. And more than 15 to completion. So there's that. So, I mean, it was a really productive game. But it was a productive, economical, efficient game that also resulted in two touchdowns and no interceptions with a 120.9 quarterback rating. You know what it reminded me of?
What's that?
Reminded me of Ben's second year when this team goes on a playoff run, wins three games in the playoffs as a road team, goes to the Super Bowl and wins. This is the type of game Ben would have. He didn't throw the ball more than 25, 30 times a game. Incredibly efficient. Didn't turn it over. It reminds me of the Ken Wisenhunt days. Am I saying these two offenses are similar?
No.
No, I am not. But the way Ben performed in that game is something I've wanted to see for a while now. I just wanted to see Ben do the easy, efficient thing. Don't go too crazy. Don't do too much. Don't go outside your physical limitations. Just take what's there. Now, I say all that with the firm knowledge of the fact that there were probably three passes that should have been intercepted by Denver defenders.
Yes.
There is that whole thing. However, they weren't, so we're left with what's in front of us as far as what the numbers show. The numbers show that Ben was economical and efficient.
Well, I just feel like, also, I mean, when we talked about this matchup, I said not Najee Harris was going to be a big deal for this game.
You did.
And he absolutely was a big deal for this game. They were able to run the football without getting holding penalties. Hallelujah. I mean, Najee's had good runs before, but it was always negated by a penalty on the offensive line. I think it's fair to say the offensive line's had two straight solid weeks.
Yes.
They were decent against Green Bay, and they were even better this past week against the Broncos.
I'd say solid in the first game and dominating in the second one.
Yeah, he ran for 122 yards on 23 carries.
Yeah, 142 yards total on 25 total touches, which is a perfect sweet spot for Najee. That's a perfect sweet spot. I don't want to see Najee get 15 touches a game or 15 carries a game, but I don't want to see him get 15 carries and 14 catches either.
And that's what they were doing for the last couple of weeks because they couldn't run the ball. They were throwing screens to him, and he was getting 30 touches, but he was only averaging like 2.9 yards per touch.
Exactly. And another thing I thought stuck out was the fact that they got to Teddy Bridgewater twice. They only got two sacks. But the two guys that got him were Devin Bush and Henry Mondo. Which,
Henry Mondo?
I was expecting them to get more. We talked about this last week. I expected this to be an ugly game that the Steelers would win just because I thought their defense would make more plays, and they won this game because their offense made more plays. Mm. Then again, the interception at the end by James Pierre, that was a play he made also, but I felt like the offense made more plays to win this game than necessarily the defense did.
No, I agree with that. I thought getting Chase Claypool back was huge. He had five catches for 130 yards and a touchdown. Deontay Johnson looking healthy again. Had the touchdown against Green Bay two weeks ago. Last week, he gets two catches for 72 yards, and he finds pay dirt again. So, Juju being out the rest of the season, you've got Claypool and Deontay Johnson still. I'm okay with that.
Yes.
I feel confident that these guys can still make plays.
And Juju, of course, with that right shoulder injury, had surgery on Wednesday. It was a separation that they said that separation often ends up being a tear in the labrum.
Mm-hmm.
So he is expected to miss the entire season, which really
it's a shame.
Hurts the receiving core. It is a shame. And for as much as people tend to give Juju a hard time about everything he does off the field and all the stuff he's involved in and just about everything else and questioning every motive that he could possibly have, you could never question the fact that this was a guy who gave his full effort.
Correct.
And never shot away from contact. He got that injury leaning into contact. He was not a guy that just avoided defenders. He was a tougher type of receiver that wanted to get tough yards, and he tried to do that, and it eventually cost him the rest of this season. But you know, all that said, this team has to try to move forward and figure out what the next step is with this offense. But as far as the global bird's eye view, I guess you can call it, I was very impressed with what this offense did. This offense, what it did against the Broncos, this is all I've wanted it to do. I don't need you to be Kansas City. I don't need you to be Buffalo. I don't even need you to be Tampa Bay. Be you, be efficient, get as many points as you need to get the win and get out and move on to the next one.
Ben completing 15 of 25 for over 250 yards and two touchdowns, no picks. That is exactly what the doctor orders.
Yeah.
Whenever it comes to a quarterback at his age running offense for a team that has not been able to score much, they put up 27 points against a Vic Fangio defense. Is
yes.
there any more you can ask for in that situation?
Absolutely not. Especially when you're going up against a quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater, who completed 24 of 38 for 288 and two touchdowns, and the one interception he threw was literally their last play from scrimmage.
It was the final play of the game where you had to make a play, and James Pierre made a play. And they did a good job getting to Bridgewater. They were rushing him, making him uncomfortable. He didn't have all the time in the world to just start running. He only had one carry for 11 yards. I mean, I don't know if they put a spy on him or what they did, but they did a good job there. This is a guy that comes back from a concussion, and he still throws for over 280 yards.
63% of his passes he completed.
He was very efficient, and the Steelers made the final play that they needed to make because Denver got right back in that game. You think in that game, hey, Steelers have this thing wrapped up. What was it, 27-12 at one point or
right.
something like that? And it was 24-6 after three quarters.
Yes.
Denver put up 13 points in the fourth quarter, and they made it a football game. It came down to one big stop. And we talked about the receiving core of Courtland Sutton and Tim Patrick. 14 catches combined for over 209 yards. They were the offense.
They did exactly what Teddy Bridgewater needed them to do, and they converted a handful of first downs, too. I was surprised that they limited Noah Fant to only three catches for 20 yards, and the tight end is normally a problem for this team. This is another thing that I need to talk about because I keep hearing people are criticizing Joe Schobert and Devin Bush. Remember we used to talk about how tight ends always killed this team?
Right.
Well, tight end didn't kill this team in this game.
I don't think a tight end's killed them once this season.
I would have to agree with that. I would have to agree with that.
Because we've talked about during our breakdowns and whenever I was solo, Darren Waller, they kept him at bay. Robert Tonyan, they kept him at bay.
They kept Tonyan really quiet.
Dawson Knox didn't really do anything for the Bills. They've done a great job stopping tight ends, which in the past they could not do.
This is what happens when you have two inside linebackers that are remotely decent at coverage.
You don't
they can go with Schobert and Bush and find a way to take the middle of the field away.
You don't have Vince Williams and Lawrence Timmons trying to cover tight ends anymore.
It changes the dynamic when you have guys that are actually reliable cover linebackers.
Yep.
And that part gets left out. And I hear people saying, oh, Devin Bush hasn't been that good. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, he hasn't made a ton of splash plays, but you're not getting burned by tight ends either.
No, he's been fine. We haven't heard his name that much because he's been doing his job. How about the guy that nobody's talking about just being Kendall Hinton?
Kendall Hinton, and I forgot about this before you reminded me. You're like, hey, wasn't that the guy who had to play quarterback last year? I totally forgot about that. I totally forgot that he had to play quarterback for Denver. Against the Saints. Was it for a full game, if I'm not mistaken? I want to say he barely made the team at that point. I'm trying to remember the backstory behind this. But he was a rookie. It was his first season with the team. He had just made the team. All three quarterbacks either test positive for COVID or had been exposed to someone who had tested positive for COVID. So none of them are available. So Kendall Hinton has to play quarterback.
And they lose 31-3, and he completed one pass for 13 yards.
One pass with two interceptions, and he got sacked once.
That game was painful to watch. Even as a guy that bet the Saints and the points, because like they're playing a guy that doesn't know how to play quarterback.
Well, I mean,
felt bad.
Well, he had played quarterback before. I want to say he played quarterback in college briefly or in high school. So he had played the position. He just hadn't played it in a while, and definitely not on that level. Well, here's something crazy about that game.
Go ahead.
I added him on my team in fantasy for that week.
You added Hinton?
I added Kendall Hinton.
You thought he would roll?
I was curious to see if he could maybe like score one touchdown with his feet.
Because you didn't start him, right?
I added him as a flex player.
You can do that?
You could do it in the league I was in.
You can put a quarterback at flex.
Well, he was already a wide receiver.
So they had that option.
So he was on my roster as a wide receiver, so I put him in as a flex guy. I was like, well, if he's able to throw one touchdown pass or score a touchdown with his feet, that's points for me. And it blew up in my face because he threw two picks. So there's that.
But yeah, him being the guy nobody's talking about, because literally we were both just like, Kendall Hinton? Why is nobody covering him? He had a touchdown.
And it was a touchdown that made it close. And it is just, for me personally, it was this kind of game. First of all, it surprised me in a couple different ways. One, it surprised me because we saw the Steelers' offense once again move down the field their first drive of the game and score a touchdown.
Yep.
They did that 2 weeks in a row. Both to Deontay Johnson. How could I possibly complain with a start like that?
You think the defenses from watching film are like, Ben can't throw it deep. So they run soft coverage and then Deontay just burns them?
And I think it's between that and having an aggressive game plan saying, hey, look, they're not expecting us to do this, so let's do this while they're not looking for it. It made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I'm going to say this again. It reminded me a lot of a Ken Wisenhunt type cult game. Think about the game against Indy.
The playoff game?
The playoff game against Indy in the 05 playoffs. Think about how aggressive they were that first drive of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They thought the Steelers were going to just run it with Bettis or run it with Willie Parker and try to grind them down, use a lot of play action. Steelers threw a lot in that first drive. I want to say Ethan Miller caught the touchdown pass to cap that drive off. Colts didn't see that coming. It was a really aggressive game plan to do the things that the other team did not expect them to do. That's what I felt like that first drive was for the Steelers in this game.
They did the same thing against the Packers, too. I texted you. I was like, whoa, where did that come from? Because I didn't see it coming.
And it wasn't like it was anything overly crazy, but I think it was just the play calling saying, hey, let's do the one thing they don't think we're going to do and take advantage of it. So credit to them, credit to Ben, credit to Matt Canada for doing that. Back-to-back games with a touchdown in the first drive for this offense. Are we giving Matt Canada credit yet?
I would.
Is it fair?
Yes.
First time they scored 20 points in the game all season. Is it fair to give Matt Canada credit yet?
Yeah.
That's where I am with that.
And they only gave up 6 points in the first half. You're up 17-6 at halftime. You're feeling pretty good.
And that is after, by the way, a touchdown run that should have been broken, but it was stopped before it got to the end zone. A touchdown-saving tackle by James Pierre that resulted in a field goal.
Yep. Javonte Williams busted a 50-yard run. I was like, oh, that's a touchdown. Then they stop him, and then they hold him to 3.
Because think if that's a touchdown.
Now it's
a 27-23 game.
Yeah, and it's 17-10 at halftime instead of 17-6.
And if we're talking about the final score, the Broncos are kicking an extra point to make this a 3-point game, and they're probably onside kicking trying to get it back to tie it. It's a much tighter game than we give it credit for.
Yep.
And it was an 8-point game, but now it could have been a 4-point game. And I thought it was great. I forget which player on defense it was. One of the players on defense credited James Pierre after the game. They talked about the interception. He goes, I feel like the biggest play of the game is when he ran him down and brought him down before he got in the end zone.
It was a big play.
And we held him to 3. I thought that was great. And that's one of those things that you see what the defense did after that, and no one's going to point to that and say, hey, that was a key point in the game. But this is what happens when you're on the field and on the sidelines, and you're more in tune with what's happening as opposed to sitting somewhere else watching it on the monitor. Those guys knew how important that play was.
Here's one stat that I look at where I just say the Steelers outplayed them. Steelers only punted the ball twice.
That's pretty good.
And we've seen a lot of Presley Harvin this season.
We have.
And the Broncos, they punted the ball 4 times. That's a big stat to me because we've seen the Steelers go 3 and out a lot this year.
Here's the Steelers drive chart for the game, to your point. This is the 9 drives that they have, not counting the kneel down at the end of the game because it only took 1 play. Touchdown, fumble, field goal, punt, touchdown, end of half, touchdown, punt, field goal. 9 drives. They scored on 5 of them.
That's all you can ask for.
2 of them were punts. 1 was the end of the half.
The fumble.
And 1 was a fumble.
The fumble, they just got to him.
Yeah.
He had no chance of getting out of that
one. He tried to step up in the pocket. They got to him before he could. They knocked it loose and they fell on it. And even then,
they held him to a field goal.
Couldn't get 7 points out of it. So there's a lot to look at and say, hey, this was probably, not even probably, even more so than Buffalo, the most team-oriented win they've seen all season.
Oh,
granted, they only have 2, but still.
Yeah, easily. This was their best performance. The defense was incredible against Buffalo, but this time it was defense was good, offense was good.
Their most complete performance.
Buffalo, they got lucky on a block punt and it was not that much that the offense did. In this situation, you put up 27 points. You only had to punt the ball twice. Najee Harris rushed for over 120 yards. That's everything you can ask for from your offense. Ben didn't throw a pick. He threw for over 250 yards. Now my question is, you bring on Seattle now, and I've been wrong about almost all my predictions when it comes to this team.
Right.
Other than the Raiders and the Bengals, I got both of those right. I got the Packers right, but I think we both knew they weren't going into Lambeau and winning. But with Denver and Buffalo, I was completely off. So am I going to be completely off now that Geno Smith is coming to town? I mean, they should roll in this game, right?
Most people will probably anticipate the same exact thing. I expect them to win this game.
How can they not? It's right. Geno Smith.
Bear in mind, I expected them to beat Denver, too.
You did. And I thought that with Teddy Bridgewater playing, it was going to be too much. credit to you. The defense was able to do it.
And they were the reason why I thought they could win it. Mm-hmm. I thought the defense could keep them in it, and all the offense had to do was be efficient. That's exactly what they were. This game is not going to be much different. Well, your defense should keep you in it and make sure your offense is efficient, and it's also a home game
Denver,
on Sunday night.
Denver's a heavy running team, and the Steelers held Javonte Williams to 61 yards, Melvin Gordon to 34 yards.
That's a win.
Seattle doesn't even have Chris Carson. No Carson, no Russell Wilson. Geno Smith is going to crash and burn against this defense as long as they do a job.
You just said it. They held Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon to under 100 yards.
Yeah.
That's a win.
And the goal for Denver was to run the football.
Right. That's a win in and of itself. Plus, here's another important thing. They got the lead early.
Yes.
That's what you want to do. We talked about this, a few weeks ago. We were talking about one possession and two possession games and how important it is when you can do one as opposed to the other.
Right.
They went and got the lead early. If you can get the lead early, make the other team catch you. If I'm a head coach, whether it's in the pro or the college ranks, if I win the coin toss, give me the ball.
Every time.
And I'm like you, as you always quote on Little Giants. Give me the ball. I'm going to stuff it down your throat, but I'm going to make you catch me.
Yeah.
And the Steelers made Denver chase after them, and Denver never caught them. So there you go.
I think that's what Saban does when he wins a coin toss. He goes, we're going to shove it down your throat, or if we kick off, we'll take it from you, then shove it down your throat. That's what he does. And that's what the Patriots would always do with Brady. They're like, give us the ball first. Tom's going to go down and get us a touchdown.
And now you got to come and catch us.
The Steelers should absolutely do that to Seattle if they win the toss.
Yes.
You take the football, and you take a lead against Geno Smith, and you make him catch you. And you don't let him set the pace.
And by him trying to catch you, he's going to have to do a couple of extra things he probably didn't want to do and force himself into a position to make a mistake faster than the Steelers would.
I mean, I look at that game last Thursday. Geno Smith surprised me at the beginning.
He did.
Then the real Geno Smith came out when he threw that forced interception.
Yes.
It was like, okay, he's human again. The big difference, though, is they don't have a run game. Does Alex Collins scare you? No. Does DJ Dallas scare you? No. These are guys that rushed the ball 19 times against the Rams, and I'd compare the Steelers' run defense to the Rams' run defense. They're both very good at stopping the run.
Sad part is, I kind of am familiar with Alex Collins because I covered Alex Collins for a little bit at Arkansas.
You saying that he does scare you?
No, I'm not saying that he scares me, but I do have a little bit of familiarity with him. He was much better.
He played for the Ravens. We remember him.
Yeah, that's the same thing Mike Tomlin said. He goes, he's a former AFC North foe. We know who he is. But, you know, I do remember him as a Razorback, but I'd say this much. I expected more from him as a professional based on what he did as a Razorback. He was a really talented athlete in college. And it just has not happened, whether it be with the Raiders or with the Seahawks.
So, with this game, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, those names scare you, but Geno Smith throwing the ball to them does not.
Tyler Lockett does not scare me as much as he makes me sad.
Because he's not a Steeler?
Because if there was any guy I wanted in the year that Tyler Lockett got drafted, that was 2015. If there was a guy in the 2015 draft that I wanted to be a Steeler, it was Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett was a slot receiver out of Kansas State, was a really good return guy, but he was fast, he was athletic, he was tough as hell. I wanted Tyler Lockett to be a Steeler so bad, and it did not happen, and I was just miserable.
So wait, this was 2015.
2015 draft.
Steelers had the 22nd pick. They took Bud Dupree.
Yes.
Where's Seattle out on here? Did they?
Seattle. Looks like Seattle did not have a first round pick in that draft.
Did he fall all the way to the second round?
Tyler Lockett was in the third round, 69th overall.
Oh, wow.
I wanted
that deal.
I wanted Tyler Lockett to be a Steeler. The Steelers drafted Bud Dupree with the first round pick. Kind of hard to argue with that. But here's what he took with the second pick. Senquez Golson.
Yikes.
Who never, by the way, never played an NFL game. Senquez Golson.
I'm looking at Seattle. At 63, they took Frank Clark. At 69, they took Tyler Lockett.
Yep.
For a team that didn't have a first-round pick, that's pretty good.
They did pretty good. They did pretty good. I can't argue with that. But yeah, the Steelers had a crack at him, and at 56, they drafted Senquez Golson. You'd have told me Tyler Lockett, you could take or like trade down into the third round and take Tyler Lockett, I wouldn't have argued with you.
No, of course not.
I mean, I'm serious. It's to the point where anytime Tyler Lockett's name comes up on Twitter, me and Alex Kozora, shout out to Alex Kozora from Steelers Depot. We always talk about how much we both like Tyler Lockett. I refer to Tyler Lockett as the one that got away. All the time.
It's a lot like James Paxton.
James Paxton. I wanted James Paxton to be a Pirate at one point. This is true. I wanted James Paxton. I wanted to have a James Paxton and Jamison Tyone double team in the rotation, and I wanted them to be the Can-Am connection, like the old wrestling tag team.
It would have been pretty cool if they could pull that off.
Big Maple and J-Mo is what I wanted.
So,
but there you go.
So now we look at this matchup. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, they're scary guys.
Yes, especially Metcalf. Metcalf is a scary guy physically.
But Geno Smith as their quarterback shouldn't scare us as much, right?
Not to the level that Lockett and Metcalf do. No, it's definitely not to the level that Russell Wilson does. Remember the last time when the Seahawks were at Heinz Field? Two things happened that day. Russell Wilson tortured the Steelers with his feet, and the other thing was Ben Roethlisberger's elbow injury.
That was the one that ended the season, right?
That was the one that ended the season.
Oh, man.
That was a couple years ago. Yep. So it sticks out, right? But Steelers had a chance to maybe wrap that game up or maybe try to stay in it. And the Seahawks closed it out because Russell Wilson, they couldn't stop him. They couldn't figure him out. There was a chance for them to put the game away, and he did it with his feet. They just couldn't figure him out. You don't have to deal with that guy now. That makes his game completely different.
Does it worry you, though, that they might just think like, oh, it's Geno Smith, we'll be okay? Is there any thought process as a football team that they can go through that?
Yes and no, because there are going to be times when you underestimate a guy, but they faced Geno Smith before. They know what to expect from him. It's not like they don't have tape on this guy or he just showed up in the league. Geno Smith's been in the league for a long time.
Yeah.
And they know who this guy is. So I don't expect them to be as thrown off by what he can do, knowing that he's been a veteran in this league for that long and they know what he's capable of. And the last time they saw him was, what, 2013, I want to say it was? It's been a long time.
Was he with the Jets?
I want to say he was with the Jets when that was going down. Okay. So this is not the same guy. I mean, it's easy to assume that the Steelers could be capable of such a thing, but I don't think this is the same guy. I don't know if it's going to be as easy for the Steelers to get that distracted or that, you know, that complacent. I expect this one to be a little bit more lopsided toward the Steelers. The only thing for the Seahawks is, and it literally is the only thing for me, can they run the football well enough to set up play action for Geno Smith? That's going to be it.
And they don't have Carson.
So
I'm going to go no, right?
I have to say no, too. I'm going to say no.
And the Seahawks are not the same defense that they were when they won Super Bowls.
No,
they are way down below.
This is not the Legion of Boom, Russell Wilson, beast mode Seattle team that went to a handful of NFC championship games and in a couple Super Bowls. This isn't that group. Not even close to that group.
So you got to feel, at least I do, the Steelers are going to be 3-3 going into the bye.
Yes, and I talked about this a couple Sundays ago. No, it was the morning of this game. I talked about it on the radio. I'm like, this team is a win against a limping Denver team and a win against a team that doesn't have Russell Wilson from being 3-3 at the bye week.
And I don't think many people saw that coming. I mean, at the beginning of the season, I believe I had them going better than 3-3, but right, then after losing a couple of games, it's like, okay, what really is this team? And I had them going 2-4 at best. Right. I didn't think they were beating Denver. And I didn't think they beat Seattle, but with no Russell Wilson, this is a very winnable game.
It's no different than looking at the schedule in 2019 after Ben's elbow got hurt, saying, well, they're going to lose this one, they're going to lose this one, they're going to lose this one.
Right.
It's starting to even itself out. It is the law of averages after a while, especially when it comes to injuries. Now, I'm trying to remember the last time the Steelers were a home favorite, and it didn't make me nervous. It's been a while.
Oh, boy.
It's been a while.
Let's see. Let's go back to the 2020 season. A home favorite. Were they the home favorite in the wild card game?
I think they were.
And that game made us nervous.
That game made us nervous. So
not using that one as an example.
It might have been the game against Washington last year. Were they a favorite in that one? I think they were, but did they make me nervous?
What about the Colts game? That game made me nervous. They only won by four.
Yeah, that game made me nervous.
I think we both thought that they'd beat the Washington football team, and that would not be a loss.
Actually, you know what game? You know what the last home game was where they were a favorite and didn't scare me? When they beat up Cincinnati last year. They beat them by 26.
Oh, yes.
That game did not scare me at all.
And they had Joe Burrow and not Ryan Finley.
Yeah, that was it. The Steelers went in last year against Cincinnati. That was the last home game where they were a favorite. I'm like, yeah, they should win this one. There we go.
That was the crazy wind game.
Yes.
It was like 45-mile-an-hour wind. And Joe Burrow just couldn't stay on his feet because his offensive line let him down so much.
Yes. Trying to figure out. I can't find what the line on that game was, but I'm pretty sure they were a favorite. Because after was
well,
over,
they were undefeated. They had to have been. They had to have been.
Yeah, and after was over, Cincinnati fell at 2-6-1. So they were definitely a favorite, probably double digits. But yeah,
it had to have been that game.
Now I'm not saying that this could result in that, but it's a game I'm not worried about them covering. And the last I checked was what 5 points. I'm not worried about them covering five.
Just I'm not worried. Preview. I'm not worried about them losing. I am worried about a little bit of a scare that just like DK Metcalf just goes off.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean,
that's fair.
You just need a quarterback that can get the ball in that guy's hands, and Geno Smith can do that. He's not Russell Wilson, obviously. He's not a great quarterback, obviously, but he can get the ball in his weapons' hands.
Now, the thing that makes me feel better is that Cam Sutton is back. He's practicing full. He's expected to play in this game. The groin injury won't be a factor, so you're going to need every healthy
yes.
corner you need.
No doubt.
Every healthy corner you can get. To play in this game, so that does make me feel pretty good. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's go around the league. Let's talk about the week that was in the NFL.
Oh, boy. Not again. All right. First of all, the Indianapolis Colts are dead to me.
Uh-oh.
I didn't even pick them, and they covered. I mean, I picked the Ravens. The Colts covered, but they didn't win the game in a game that they should have won.
The game. Now, granted, two things happened that should not have happened. One, the fumble recovery
yes.
in the red zone
yes.
should have stood as a fumble recovery for a touchdown. That was not a forward lateral.
The only reason that they gave was he lateraled the ball at the 35-yard line, and when the guy caught it that was behind him, he caught it at the 35-yard line. He threw it backwards, but he caught it at the same yard line.
But
they said that's
forward.
Not... They called that the forward lateral.
That doesn't make sense to me. If anything, it's a lateral, not a forward lateral.
I agree with you. I thought that it should have been a touchdown, too. But
I thought that was terrible.
I did, too. And then Rodrigo Blankenship getting hurt. They put it right in field goal range. They said, go win us a football game. And when they said his hip was hurt, I texted you. I was like, dude,
he's not making this. That's exactly what you told me. And then there's the other thing that sticks out. They had a 19-point lead with a chance to make it 20, and instead of kicking it, which now... maybe looks different in context because we know about Rodrigo Blankenship's injury.
Right.
They go for two and fail.
And they let Lamar throw for over 330 yards in the second half.
You can't do that. You can't do it. You cannot do it.
So, yeah, that one let me down. And let's do it this way. Let's do it like College Football Remix.
Yes.
Teams that impressed you, teams that let you down, take away. And what's your other one?
Team that did exactly what you expected them to do.
Perfect. Okay, go ahead. We'll start with team that let you down.
Team that let me down. I picked the Bills to beat Kansas City. So
yes, you did.
They didn't let me down.
So did I.
I'll go with Carolina.
Yes.
Carolina let me down.
They had that game wrapped.
They did.
And they let Jalen Hurts... bring the Eagles back and win yep. a football game.
Yep, sure did.
Darnold threw three picks against that defense.
Yeah, with whom on it? Whom?
That's terrible.
Well, Darius Slay had two of them and Steven Nelson had one. They do have good corners. A couple good corners and Javon Hargrave and Fletcher Cox. That's their defense.
Fair.
Pretty much it. But that's pretty much it. Everything else, as well as Carolina has played against other teams, they lay an egg against Philly.
Right.
That's the team you decide to slack off against that improved the 2-3? That's the one? Yeah.
No, I have no arguments there.
Carolina let me down.
I'll say the teams that let me down, The Patriots only winning by 3 in Houston?
Yeah.
They let Captain Neck cover a spread?
Oh, man.
Josh, his over-under was 189.5, and he threw for 312 yards That's against insane. That defense.
That is insane.
What did I miss?
That's insane. Nothing else really surprised me as far as teams that let me down.
Oh, in ways of covering, the Patriots let me down, and the Packers let me down. Mason Crosby missed a bunch of field
goals. That's a good one.
The overtime, fine, they pushed, but they did not cover, and that was a game they should have won outright, not by just 3 points.
You got a point there.
And the Raiders let me down. They let the Bears go into Vegas and steamroll them.
I'm not big on the Raiders. I'm just not. And this is before John Gruden got canned.
Well,
I'm
yeah.
not big on the Raiders. I never was going into the season. I just wasn't.
They were definitely pretenders.
Absolutely. All right, team that impressed you.
Oh, Tampa Bay Buccaneers destroyed the Dolphins. Tom Brady threw 5 touchdowns. They rolled. They did exactly what I expected them to do. And I know that that's a category.
Yes.
So I'll say the team that impressed me was Buffalo. They went into Kansas City and they dominated.
See, Buffalo is the other team that did exactly what I expected them
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, it is.
Tampa and Buffalo did exactly what I saw was coming in. But we talked about this last week. Buffalo and Kansas City had been tied for the most points scored in the AFC, and Kansas City had allowed the most points in the AFC.
Their defense,
I thought that was a terrible matchup for Kansas City.
Their defense has way too many holes.
Absolutely.
Which is weird, because it was really good last year.
Yes. Now, let's get to the team that impressed me, because we already talked about the two that actually did what I expected them to do in Tampa and in Buffalo.
Okay.
The one that impressed me, I'm more and more impressed by the Chargers every week.
Yes.
The Chargers impressed me.
Absolutely. That game was insane.
It was a great game.
Okay. First of all, have you ever seen a defense literally pick up a running back and put him into the end zone?
No, never. Never. That was a new one. And that was the thing that I saw. I'm like, you don't see that every day. That was pretty impressive.
I
think Belichick would try something like that.
I was like, they're not going to cover because they're just going to kick it. And then they – oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah. I mean, the way that L.A. ran that offense, you knew I liked Justin Herbert before the season started.
Correct.
You knew how I felt about Justin Herbert. 26 of 43, 398 for 4 touchdowns, no picks.
He was insane. And against that defense,
the Browns defense
has been very good going into that game. And he put up 47 points. Look at this breakdown. First quarter, 7-3, Chargers. At halftime, 20-13, Cleveland. After the third quarter, 27-21. Fourth quarter, the Chargers scored 26 points. And they held Cleveland to 15.
They scored more points in the fourth quarter than they did the entire 3 quarters combined.
Exactly.
That's nuts.
Also, Austin Eckler is a beast.
I have Austin Eckler on one of my fantasy
teams.
So
do I.
And I was rather grateful to have him. And on the other one, I have Mike Williams. And he scored me 2 touchdowns.
And Kareem Hunt for our team in the fan league.
There you go.
Another guy that was a beast.
I mean, but for the Chargers' sake.
Josh, they might win this division.
I was getting to that. For the Chargers' sake, for what they are on offense, all they were missing was the quarterback. Their offensive line played one of the better games I've seen. You know whose name we didn't hear a lot from that game? You know who was very quiet for that game for Cleveland? Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Myles Garrett had 1 sack, but he had 2 tackles in the game.
That's it.
They kept him pretty contained. You're not going to stop Myles Garrett. But if you can keep him quiet, which I thought they did, Cleveland had 2 sacks. That's it. They did not have a lot of pressure on Justin Herbert. I thought that was really important.
Well, wasn't that the one thing we talked about when it came to the NFL draft with the Chargers? They had to go get the offensive line,
and they
did do that.
They did indeed. So, to credit to the offensive line, these were the guys that started. Strom Norton, Rashawn Slater, Ode Ibushi, Matt Filer, former Steeler, and Corey Linsley. But Rashawn Slater was the guy that a lot of people gave credit to at the end of the game. This kid's a rookie and stepped up and did his thing.
Yep.
So, Chargers, definitely the team that impressed me. Who's the team that impressed you?
Well, definitely the Chargers as well, but I'm also impressed with the Cardinals. They're still undefeated. They only won by 7 points. They didn't light up a scoreboard. But they're still undefeated.
They came very close, considering the fact that they played against San Francisco without Jimmy Garoppolo, and then they ended up losing Trey Lance to an injury. They came very close to letting me down.
Yeah.
Arizona.
But they were able to win the game.
I thought they should have done more, but they were able to win the game.
Kyler Murray still threw for 239 yards. There was nothing he did wrong. It was just they couldn't put the ball in the end zone other than DeAndre Hopkins.
I agree. Now, here's one thing I will say.
And James Conner.
Week 5, Kyler Murray still in the MVP discussion. Josh Allen kicked the door in.
Oh, Josh Allen absolutely kicked the door in.
He kicked the door in and made everybody remember that he could still play. I think that could happen again this week.
He was my pick when we did our preseason picks. Josh Allen was my pick for MVP.
He was. And after this past week, I can't argue with it.
What's your takeaway?
My takeaway for this past week is that there's a lot of bad teams in this league. There's a lot of bad teams. The Jets are still bad. The Falcons are still bad. Even though they won, the Eagles are bad. The Lions are terrible. The Titans are worse, even though they beat Jacksonville. Actually, I take that back. The Titans are terrible. The Lions are worse.
Can we Miami's talk about how the Lions had that game won, and then they outlined themselves?
They outlined themselves. They're awful. Washington football team is bad, even though they lost to the Saints at home, and the Saints are helter-skelter.
I can't figure out the Saints.
The Texans let the Patriots come back because they suck. The Bears, even though beating the Raiders, I still don't trust them. The 49ers, they're screwed if they can't have a healthy quarterback. I really can't blame them. Injuries are their issue, just like injuries are Seattle's issue. The Giants are terrible, even though they have some promise on offense.
I'll tell you my takeaway. Kansas City's human again.
Yes. They're in last place.
Teams have figured them out. I don't know how. I don't know if they were like, hey, look what the Miami Dolphins did last year against them. Why don't we try doing that? Because it worked.
Brian Flores wrote the blueprint defensively on how to slow down.
And it's happening. Mahomes is human again. It's weird.
Not to mention, the Bills did it the right way. Slow the offense down and then outrun them.
Keep them off the field as much as you can.
Buffalo kept them off the field, but they also got points. They got the ball and they got points. And they got points in bunches. They did that really consistently throughout the game. Like we just talked about, Josh Allen strengthened his case for MVP just by the way he performed alone. They did everything they needed to do to win that game.
It's only been 5 weeks, and I think it's safe to say Chiefs-Buccaneers is probably not happening. I think it's safe to say.
I think Kansas City can still rally, even though they're 2 games out of first place. But the Chargers right now are in the driver's seat. They can keep themselves ahead of this. And if Justin Herbert plays the way he's playing, to step up the way he did in the game against Cleveland, I think you're right. I think the Chargers can win this division. I don't think you're crazy.
Could the Chiefs be a team that doesn't make the playoffs?
I'm not ready to go there yet, but I will say this much. You know, and I won't go there yet because two teams in the AFC East have one win and three teams in the South have one win or less.
Well, the South is garbage. Yes. The only team that's making the playoffs out of the South is Tennessee.
And the only one that might make it out of the East is Buffalo.
I don't think New England's going to get it.
So I don't think the Chiefs are dead yet. They're only a game behind Denver and Vegas.
But the AFC North is pretty strong. Cincinnati at 3-2, Cleveland at 3-2. The Steelers win today. They're 3-3.
I feel about Cincy almost the same way I do about the Chargers. I put the Chargers ahead of Cincinnati. But if Cincinnati can pull off another win or two that no one thinks they have any business getting, you have to start getting serious about the Bengals.
They got to win today. You have to beat the Lions.
You have to beat the Lions, and then they'll be 4-2. You start taking them serious after 4-2?
I don't think we saw that coming. I mean, we talked about the Bengals and how they were an offensive line away from being good.
Right.
I don't even know if they have the offensive line yet because I haven't watched that much Bengals football, but they are, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow are fun to watch.
They're doing what they need to do. We'll get more into that as far as what we expect to see from them in Hot Sheet Picks. It's coming up in the next segment. In the meantime, we will take a break. When we come back, before we get to Hot Sheet, we got to talk about the division series for Major League Baseball.
Dude.
Yeah. This is worth discussing. A couple surprises. And one of the teams I picked is already out of it. So there's that, too. Episode number 29 of the Sunday Morning Grind, the Chidi Awoma episode. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley. We're taking a break. We'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Grind podcast with Greg Finley and Josh Taylor. Check us out on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and Anchor. Also, follow us on Twitter at SundayMorngrind. That's Sunday Morn Grind on Twitter. We cover Pittsburgh sports and national sports. Be sure to tune into the podcast each and every week. Now, back to the podcast.
Welcome back. Episode 29 of the Sunday Morning Grind, the Chidi Uwoma episode of the show. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley. We talked a lot of football in the first half of the show. We're going to talk about a little bit more in the hot sheet. Before we get to that, we got to talk postseason baseball. We are three out of the four series in the division series. At the time of this recording, Giants and Dodgers had not yet concluded. So we'll talk about the remainder of those series. And as of right now, we know two of the teams, or should say three of the teams, in the league championship series round. Houston and Boston advance on the American League side. Atlanta advances on the National League side, which I have to admit, I did not see coming.
I got that one.
You did.
I didn't trust the Brewers. And they did exactly what I expected them to do. Pitch well, don't hit well.
Brewers scored a grand total of 5 runs in 4 games. And 4 of them came in the final game of the season.
Yelich had 2 hits. Mm-hmm. They were terrible. And I mean, they do this every time.
They got shut out 3-0 in back-to-back games. Max Fried did it the first time. Well, I mean, you know, got the win. And then Ian Anderson got the win in the second one.
They got the Charlie Morton of all pitchers to get to.
And they only got 2 runs off of him.
Right, but it was enough.
So it wasn't like they did a ton off Charlie Morton. It's just Atlanta didn't score. Charlie Morton gave up 2 runs with 9 strikeouts in 6 innings. He did his job.
Right.
Which, it wouldn't be the first time Charlie Morton pitched a good game and his team couldn't get him any offense.
Right.
Yes, Pirates, I'm looking at you. So I can't blame Charlie Morton for that.
No, I'm not saying he was bad. I'm just saying of all the pitchers in that rotation, for them to actually beat.
Of all the ones they beat Charlie Morton. Yeah, it's insane.
And then Freddie Freeman taking Hader deep, that was awesome.
It's a good way to end that series.
I mean, he made 2 dudes look absolutely stupid throwing sliders on them, and then he tried to sneak a fastball by Freddie Freeman.
Which you don't do with Freddie Freeman.
No, you keep throwing the slider. You don't throw him a fastball, and he was ready for it.
Yeah.
That was a fun series.
That was a good way to cap that series off. The surprise for me, but Atlanta was a bigger surprise in this one, but Boston knocking off Tampa. I had Tampa going in the World Series.
So did I. I didn't see this one coming at all.
No.
The Red Sox pitching has always been a fear for me just because you've got Chris Sale, who's good. Nathan Eovaldi has looked great in the playoffs, but in the regular season, he was hit or miss. And then after that, the rest of that rotation was nothing special. But they've done some things. They moved Nick Pivetta to the bullpen, and he's been an absolute stud. For them.
He got the win in that game 3 that went 13 innings.
He's been dropping curveballs on these guys that start at like the above the zone and drop right into it. I mean, it's like a 12-6 curveball that he just broke out. Because I remember whenever we would bet baseball, we'd bet the Red Sox and Pivetta would start, how mad I'd get because he'd get shelled. But they're figuring it out.
Well, here's the thing. Boston's pitching wasn't that great. They actually got outscored. They only outscored Tampa 26-20.
Huh.
Because they got shut out in game 1. They scored 14 in game 2.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So
that was a game they were down 5-1 because Jordan freaking Luplo hit a grand slam.
But then Boston wins 14-6 in game 2, 6-4 in 13 innings in game 3, and then 6-5 in game 4. So they didn't score at all in game 1, but then in the remaining 3 games of the series, they scored 26 runs.
It also helps, too, when you win a game on the road. In a 5-game series, you take it back home now. If you win both of those at home, it's over. And they didn't want to go back to Tampa. And so they did a job and they won.
Yeah, and to that point, to be able to do that the way they did, go home, win the 2 remaining games, and get out of there and do it in the fashion that they did by just, well, the 13-inning game, that's one thing. But to win the last game the way they did, they edged it out the perfect way they needed to, and despite of the fact that Tampa still scored runs in those 2 games.
Right.
I thought they did everything necessary.
Moving on to the Astros, Houston back in the championship series again. The White Sox just continue to be a letdown.
I did not expect the White Sox to show up in this series. I expected Houston to win it.
I did too, but not like this. I expected Houston to win the series, but I thought the White Sox would at least show up with their bats.
You also knew the reason why I didn't want to want the White Sox to win the series.
You hate Tony La Russa.
I'm not a Tony La Russa guy. If I had to pick between him and Dusty Baker, I'm taking Dusty every time. And yeah, the White Sox often showed up for literally one game. And the other three games, they scored a combined 6 runs.
The one game they won, Dylan Cease was the pitcher.
Yes.
They lost with Lance Lynn. They lost with Lucas Giolito.
Yes.
And then who was the other guy?
Rodon.
Yeah. They won with Cease, and that was the one game where I was like, they're not going to win with Cease.
And Kopech got credit for the win.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's weird.
The Astros were the team that did what I expected them to do in beating up the White Sox.
Yeah.
Now, we'll go into this much because Dodgers and Giants, like we mentioned, that series has not been finished by the time of this recording. But looking into, let's look at least at the AL side of this before
All right.
we move forward. Houston and Boston, who you got?
I think I like Houston because of the pitching.
I got to go Houston because of the pitching. Got to. Because Boston, for as much as we thought their pitching would do, Tampa scored runs on them.
Yeah.
If Houston scores runs on you like that, you're not beating them.
Not with Valdez as your pitcher. Not with who am I blanking on? Who's McCullers?
McCullers.
I mean, Greinke they brought out of the bullpen because he was horrible in September.
Right.
They brought him in during a blowout, and he was great all year. And then he just fell off a cliff in September.
McCullers started 2 games. He got credited with 1 win, 10 2/3 innings, struck out 9, and gave up 1 run.
Valdez is the difference maker for me. The Red Sox have some lefties in that lineup.
Yep.
Valdez is just going to eat for lunch.
Yeah. And, I mean, granted, he wasn't lights out. 4 1/3 innings, gave up 4 runs, but he struck out 6.
There you go.
So, yeah, I have to go with you on that one. I agree.
I'll
like
be honest,
pitching more.
I'm going to be honest, though. Both of these rotations worry me. Because after 1-2, after the 1-2 punch,
what do you
it's
got?
A wild card.
Agreed.
For both of these clubs.
Absolutely agree.
So, if the Red Sox win, it's because Houston's pitching after games 1 and 2 was not good enough.
I concur completely. Totally concur.
Okay, so let's do a hypothetical. If the Dodgers won on Thursday, which we don't know, would they beat Atlanta?
Yes.
If the Giants won on Thursday, would they beat Atlanta?
Yes, and probably faster.
Okay, so we're both on the same page. Whoever wins the NL West is going to win championship series.
Whoever won that remaining series probably wins the NLCS and goes to the World Series.
Yes. It's the same song and dance with the Braves. Win the first round, can't do enough in the second round.
In fairness, the Braves should not be there. They're not supposed to be. They don't have Ronald Acuna.
I know. They shouldn't even won this division.
They shouldn't have won a division. They should not be here. Thank you, Mets. Thank you, Phillies, for letting Atlanta walk into the postseason and set them up to win a division series that they should not have won. The Braves should not exist right now in the postseason. Shout out to Jock Peterson. He's been doing his thing. I mean, he's pretty much done his best Ronald Acuna impersonation that he can. Credit to them. I can't take anything from them. They pitched well. But
even Jorge Soler has been good for them, and he just got COVID, and they didn't even miss him. They still won without him.
I think the Braves were like, you know what? No one wanted us to be here. We're playing with house money. Screw it. Let's just go all out.
Yes.
And credit to them for that.
It's a 16 seed in March Madness that wins the first round. Like, nobody expected us to do this.
Yeah.
The Braves are that team. Nobody thought they'd be here.
And that's the reason they're going to prove both of us wrong, because we've now said that either team that's remaining could beat them, and now Atlanta's going to go to the World Series, specifically because they said that they would not. Or we said that they wouldn't.
Dude, so, yeah. Rich Rod didn't even make this rotation or this roster.
Yeah.
He didn't even make the bullpen.
I liked that trait when it happened.
So did I.
And I like it more now. So, with that said, and we'll recap more about this, and we'll have more about that series when we get to next week's show. But
wait. You know what we get to talk about next week as well?
What's that?
The NBA is back.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Yes.
Tuesday is opening night.
Yes, it is.
So we get to talk about basketball again.
We get to talk about basketball again.
That's exciting.
Yes. We'll talk about basketball without having to deal with all the outside noise, which will be fantastic, because that's what we intend to do in every way.
I'm all in.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. I'm sure some of you will probably figure out what I'm talking about. So before we close out here, got about 10 minutes to get things closed out here. We got Hot Sheet coming up here. And last week, Greg, I have to admit, you came back and caught me 2 weeks ago. And last week, you dropped the hammer and pulled ahead.
I'm only up by one game, though. So, and we're both below room temperature.
We're still below room temperature.
So it's nothing to brag about, like, at all.
No, that's okay.
It's like if you get like a C minus on a test. That's how I feel about our scores right now.
But given our history picking games, we were both the team that people expected, that did exactly what people expected, which is stay below room temperature. So there's that.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So Thursday Night Football?
Yes.
I never got your pick. Who'd you take?
Thursday Night Football, that was the Tampa game.
It's Bucks, it's Eagles, Bucks. Eagles plus 6.5.
It's the Bucks.
You took the Bucks?
Yeah, it's the Bucks at home.
It's in Philly.
It's in Philly.
Yes.
Oh, in which case?
I'll let you change it.
I'll stay with the Bucks.
Okay.
Staying with Tampa.
So, I saw a stat that Tom Brady hasn't covered the spread in the last 10 primetime games.
Yes.
I feel like he's due.
He's definitely due.
I feel like he's due.
He's due, and it's Philly.
So I'm taking the Bucks.
Yeah.
Tampa. All right. So we're both going with Tampa.
And that game will have happened by the time that this recording is heard.
Correct.
We're doing this before the game. Just so we're clear.
This is kind of weird.
Yes.
Okay. 9:30 this morning. Finns, Jags in London.
Dear God.
Yeah, horrible. Miami -3.
Miami by default.
Yeah, you can't.
I'll also use this with the preface that I usually give, that when they play in London, usually one team shows up and the other one is just like gets stuck somewhere over the Atlantic mentally.
Somehow the Jets only lost by 7 in London against the Falcons, because it's the Falcons.
I think the Falcons just slowed down because they got out to such a big lead. Gotta be the Dolphins, right? They're not gonna let the Jaguars score that many points.
I would like to think that's true.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Miami as well.
Does Urban Meyer win a game this season?
He's had multiple chances, and it hasn't happened yet, so I'm going to go with no. What about you?
First ever 0-17 team? My God. Oof. I have to look at this game.
What was last week? It was the Titans game.
They lost to the Titans by 18.
Yeah. And that was a game they were only down 7-6 in the first quarter.
There's a couple games they could win. They still have to face Houston one more time at home, and they face the Jets on the road.
Okay.
I'll say they win one game.
All right. So. And Urban will be gone at the end
and
of
Urban's
the year.
And Urban's gone to the end of the year. So.
All right. Texans and Colts. Another fun one. Indianapolis is getting -10. Where are you going with this one? It's in Indy.
Texans cover this one. No, take that back. As much as I'm trying to think the Texans can do that, I just remember what they did against New England. Indianapolis will not allow that to happen. Indy will cover at home.
I really hope you're right. I'm going the same way. Bengals at the Lions. Lions +3.5.
Bengals. Although I'm really concerned for the Bengals' kneecaps since they're playing the Lions.
What do you mean?
Their coach likes to bite kneecaps.
Oh, what?
You didn't hear that from the opening press conference when they hired him?
I forgot.
He was like, we're going to scratch, we're going to fight, we're going to bite people's kneecaps. And I'm like, oh, okay. So the 2021 Lions, we may not win, but we'll bite a bunch of people's kneecaps. So, yeah, I think despite stumbling and probably having some blood spurting from their knees, they still win the game.
I think the Lions have a hangover from losing to the Vikings the way they did last week.
That's fair.
That they're going to get their doors blown off. That's I'm taking fair. The Bengals and the points.
All right.
Kansas City at the Washington football team. Washington +6.5.
I can't see Kansas City looking that bad 2 weeks in a row. Give me the Chiefs.
I feel the same way. They can't.
They're going to get up off the mat sooner or later.
They're going to do what they did against the Eagles, and they're not going to give up as many points. They give 30 points to the Eagles. They cannot let Taylor Heinicke put up 30.
I think you're on to something.
All right. Vikings at the Panthers. Carolina +2.
Carolina is a home dog. Give me Panthers.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Carolina as well.
Yeah. Against that Vikings team, I'm not impressed with the Vikings at all.
I'm still trying to figure out what they are.
I mean, are we really expecting Kirk Cousins to be that much better than Sam Darnold? I'm not. Especially not on the road. Panthers is a home dog. That feels like I'm stealing money.
I think it's because the way they lost last week.
Possibly.
That they're doing that.
Possibly. But still, Panthers is a home dog. Give me that every day.
Here's one where they want us to overthink it. The Rams are at the New York Football Giants. The Giants are plus 9.5. It is a West Coast team in New York. Where are you going with this one?
Giants, will they have Daniel Jones?
I don't think so.
They won't have Saquon Barkley.
Let's see.
He's out for multiple weeks.
Oh, yeah. Saquon's hurt for a while.
And I'm pretty sure they won't have Daniel Jones if I'm not mistaken.
So, as of Thursday, Daniel Jones and 10 others limited. 3 did not practice.
Rams. No quarterback, no running
Jones back. Practiced with no contact, but I don't think he's going to play.
Yeah, Rams.
Yeah. I don't even know who the backup for the Giants is, but it can't be good.
I'm not even curious. Which is a terrible, terrible thing to say. I'm not even curious as to the back quarterback.
Who was that big guy?
Oh, it's Mike Glennon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Glennon played it for them against the Cowboys when
Jones
got hurt. In which
case, Rams.
I thought you were going to change.
No.
No, in that case.
No.
Well, if it's Blaine Gabbert, you would have went with the Giants.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson now or Jack Nicholson in 1970, 74. Meg Ryan. That's one. I just dropped that one on.
Okay. I have no idea what that's from.
It's from Billy Madison.
Okay. I don't know.
Norm MacDonald, by the way, rest in peace.
I don't know movie quotes like you and my other friends do. You guys can just do it in insert movie quote here, and it just goes over my head.
I had a softball team. You'd be kicking the crap out of other teams and doing movie quotes the entire time.
I'm sure that your manager was not happy.
Oh, he thought it was hilarious, but the umps thought we were crazy. Other teams thought we were jerks. We were just being goofy.
Okay, here's one that I like this game a lot. Chargers at the Ravens. Baltimore minus 3.
Ravens win, but Chargers cover.
Really?
It'll come down to 1 or 2 points. Chargers are going to make it a game.
So you think like 24-23 type deal?
Yeah, maybe even a 31-30. It'll be that close. But the Ravens will edge them out just because they still have Justin Tucker and they still have Lamar at home.
So the Chargers cover, Ravens
cover,
win.
But the Ravens win. So technically, for picking sake, the Chargers.
I'm going Chargers as well, but I think they win outright.
Wow.
You can't stop Justin Herbert right now. And they let, and the Ravens let the Colts put up 22 points.
This is true. They didn't let Lindy go up and down the field on it.
So we'll see.
Okay.
Packers at the Bears. Chicago plus 5.
Might be Aaron Rodgers' last chance to light up Chicago at Soldier Field. Give me the Packers.
Yeah, it's got to be the Packers.
Absolutely.
And Mason Crosby's going to make a bunch of kicks.
Absolutely.
All right. I believe that is all for the 1 o'clock slate. We move to the 4 o'clock slate. Cardinals are at the Browns. Cleveland getting minus 3.5.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but Arizona.
I thought you were going to say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Cleveland.
I usually don't like picking West Coast teams traveling across in a game that's that contested, but that kind of line. That 3.5 for the Browns concerns me.
Yeah, why are they the home team? And why are they favorites if the Cardinals are undefeated?
And have an MVP candidate.
And what has Baker done that makes you think, oh, yeah.
And didn't the Browns just get lit up by the Chargers and give up 47 points?
Correct.
Including 26 in the final quarter?
Correct. And Chubb and Hunt didn't practice that much this week. They're probably going to play, but they didn't practice that much.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you there. I'm taking the Cardinals. We do not have any differences yet.
Wow.
I mean, it's just that kind of week, though. I mean,
right.
these are kind of just – these are bad games.
These are pretty straightforward.
Vegas at the Broncos, Denver minus 3.5.
It could be Denver minus 6. I'd still take the Broncos.
Yeah.
Just because you're playing Vegas and that team is in disarray right now.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Nassib took a day off because John Gruden is John Gruden.
So we both go with Denver. Another one that we agree on.
Another one that was a no-brainer, too.
Cowboys at the Patriots, New England plus 3.5. I'm just going to save you one here. It's the Cowboys.
Granted, if there's anybody that can maybe figure Dak out and make it complicated, it's probably Belichick and the Patriots, but I'll still say that.
All right, Sunday Night Football, Seattle at Pittsburgh, Steelers minus 5.
Steelers.
Yep.
Seattle's not going to score. Steelers will get enough points to have a double-digit lead. They'll cover this.
I agree with you there.
It'll be the most uninspiring blowout we've seen.
Finally, Monday Night Football, Bills at the Titans, Tennessee plus 5.5.
You saw what Buffalo did in Arrowhead, right?
Oh, yeah.
You don't think they're going to do that in Nashville? Bills, man.
I'm taking the Bills as well. So we took the same pick for every game.
Who saw that coming?
I don't think we've ever done that.
I don't think we have either.
Usually, we at least have one difference. This week, nothing.
Not even going back to the radio days.
What if we both do terrible?
Then it would fit the profile now, wouldn't it? It would be exactly what we've been all year, which is below room temperature.
It's going to save me a lot of math, though, because I don't have to add up both of our scores that much because we're both picking the same one.
And next week, when we recap the league that was over this week, I will probably list us as the team that did exactly what I expected them to do, which was stay below room temperature. Because we're going to find a way to screw this up.
We need to rename this to Ice Cold Sheet.
We need to call it Brisk Sheet.
The sheet is not hot anymore.
No, the sheet has not been hot in quite some time.
All right, next week we'll talk Steelers, Seahawks. Steelers have a bye week, so that gives us time to talk about the NBA.
It does. Now, here's a question. Episode 30. What are we thinking for episode 30?
Oh, boy. Well, James Conner's the obvious.
James Conner's the easy one. Chad Scott.
Chad Scott.
Chad Scott episode.
I like that a lot.
I think we have a unanimous vote for the Chad Scott episode. So we will see you next week on the Chad Scott episode, episode 30 of the Sunday Morning Grind.
Don't forget about the giveaway.
By the way, if you missed this at the top of the show, I don't know why, because it's a podcast, so you had to be listening. But here's a reminder. The first person to tweet us at the show, at Sunday MORN Grind, with the correct spelling of Chidi Uwoma, because this is episode number 29, the Chidi Uwoma episode. Whoever tweets the show first with the correct spelling, and you have to tweet the show. Don't tweet me, don't tweet Greg, tweet the show. Sunday MORN Grind.
And follow us.
And follow us. You will get a free autographed copy. Both Greg and I will sign this of Pittsburgh's Civic Arena. It's a book that I, along with another collaboration of other writers, the Association of Gentlemen Pittsburgh Journalists, we wrote this together with a lot of stories from the old igloo, celebrating pretty much 60 plus years since the opening of Pittsburgh Civic Arena. There you go. Free copy of a book.
Do it. Episode dropped at 5 a.m. Hit us up at 5:01.
Yeah, it's easy. Just find the spelling of a name and tweet us, and you got a free book coming.
No, don't find the spelling. You're not allowed to cheat.
Well, you're not allowed to cheat.
But we can't tell if you did or not.
This is true.
Wink, wink, nudge,
so just tweet us with the spelling of the name, basically. But we'll see you next week on the Chad Scott episode of the Sunday Morning Grind. For Greg Finley, I'm Josh Taylor. See you later.